following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
Good morning. This is Debbie on CKUW 95.9 FM here in Winnipeg, the University of Winnipeg. It's a beautiful day today. -2 outside, a little bit windy though, so dress warmly against that wind. It's going to be gusting to 50 kilometers an hour this afternoon, so stay bundled up and warm. And this is the time slot for Of No Fixed Address. And While we're waiting for things to get going here, we're going to hear some more from the Ron Paley wonderful solo piano album, The More You Know. We just heard the theme, and now we're going to go on to the U of M competing university here in Winnipeg.
Good morning, folks. We're a little bit late today, a couple of minutes. I was just heavily involved in another meeting that had a hard time escaping. But we're here. It's 11 a.m., and if you're listening to CKW 95.9 FM on Friday morning at 11, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address, your advocacy radio show on homelessness and poverty. And speaking up for the people who are vulnerable in our world. And I don't have the weather in front of me, but it's not a nice day with the breeze that's going out there. So, you know, be kind when you go to Tim's, you go to Robin's, buy an extra coffee. by a T. It's actually minus six, which is really nice. We have had a great, great fall this year. And without the snow, it makes it just a little bit better, but it's still miserable when you got to be out there 24/7. Today, I have my good friend and lived experience brother, Jacob Kaufman, on air. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm awesome, Al. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're going to be... I've asked Jacob to come on today because we're going to be talking about, a couple of things down in the Core area, and one is Hope Alley, which received a real shot in the arm from the mayor and from city council. And then we're going to talk about your job and what you do over down in the Core area there as well, if that works for you. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Al.
Yeah, you bet. So we're going to talk a little bit about Hope Alley. We're going to talk a little bit about the washroom and the job that you have there and how both sites are a benefit to the folks out there on the street. It's been a long struggle, to get Hope Alley done. And it started in the process about 7 years ago when I brought the Homeless Memorial Service back to Winnipeg. I had communication with the city and Councillor Santos about it about 4 years ago. And the problem was it was rejected at that time, and the attitude towards folks in the area was not kind to the homeless, and so we couldn't really carry on conversation. But today, I just want to talk about, and we'll get into that story a little bit more, and what the city has done for us there, and what they are going to do, hopefully, and just talk about what Hope Alley means to the city, and what the facility that you're working in means to the folks on the street and our brothers and sisters out there. Hope is that big intangible word, right? But for me, why I had to see that word up there is because if people can see it, it keeps that thought in mind, I think. And I might be wrong on that, but that was the reason why I put that word up there, just to give people a little bit of hope somewhere down the line, right, that someday something can happen. We all know that we're in a battle against all three levels of the government for the most part, and the cost of living and everything else is just working against folks on the street. What are your thoughts on Hope Alley, Jacob?
Hope Alley is hope for the community. It's the runway in the downtown core that leads to 90% of the organizations mm-hmm. that are there to help people mm-hmm. and provide them food, services, housing, everything. So that alley is, it means that there's something.
Yes.
It means that people care, mm-hmm. that we're there for people.
Yes.
That's the way I look at the Hope Alley, and it's a beautiful place, and it's just going to get more beautiful, I hope, in the future.
Yeah, it will, and again, it is a passageway as well as a place where residents sit and congregate, right?
Yeah.
And that's why it was important that we bring the Homeless Memorial Service to that particular area, because it's home for folks, right?
It is. The memorial, especially, it allows the community to know that mm-hmm. they're not just statistics.
Yes.
They're not forgotten. We remember their names. We remember them. We remember the impact they have mm-hmm. on our lives as workers mm-hmm. to helpers to the community.
And, our last service, didn't have as – but, the sadness is I think this year we're going to top our unofficial count on homelessness by 50% or something because of the, fentanyl and other such things out there. And it's really, really sad that in this day we're losing over 100 people a year. To the streets, but this year's service seemed to me a little bit different. There's a good spirit in the air, it's so good to have open mic and have folks there talk about their loved ones. and talk about the people that have passed away on the street. And what better place to do it than in Hope Valley there? I think it's, you know, really appropriate. But again, the whole key thing is not allowing folks on the street who die, who don't get the obituaries, to be seen as people and siblings and so on, instead of just numbers.
Exactly, Al. And it's because for people that work in the community who give everything they are for the community,
right.
they're not numbers. They're names, faces, they're people. They're are, like, for me, they're my mothers, my
yes.
fathers, my aunties, my uncles, my cousins, my brothers, my sisters. They're my everything, because
yes.
they give me so much back. I get a lot of, you know, thank yous over the years. Thank you for doing this. You did this and that for me. But really, it's the community that allows us to do our job. And it's hard, especially this year when we've lost double the amount
yes.
that we did last year. They can't just be looked at the statistics and remember the statistics. That's why Hope Alley, the memorial, everything, it's just so important to everyone in that core area.
It really is. And, you know, we had a meeting on November 6th with a few folks from different organizations, and far too many of us were there that day. But we also had about 20 people from community there. And we wanted to know their opinion on what they wanted to see in Hope Alley, because this is where they live. And
yeah.
and folks in the Bell Hotel and folks on the street. And we wanted to see what they – and we came up with some really, you know, remarkable ideas that just kind of what we've heard before. But, you know, I'll just – give an example of what came out, you know, like canopies over the seating area. And of course, they wanted more seats in there too, but canopies over the seating area and putting radiating heat lamps underneath the canopies to keep people warm while they're sitting there. And that means, you know, they can use them on days like this, and then on days when the temperature gets to minus 10 or 20 or something, they can sit there and have some comfort if they have nowhere else to go. And
yeah.
I think it's really key that particular – those two things, the canopies to keep the rain off and the snow and the heat, radiating heat lamps, I think are extremely good ideas that should be put into place there. And you know, and just so people can't drive the cars anymore, we're going to level out the concrete all the way down to the end of the building, the Bell Hotel, so people, or to the back lane, so people can't drive the cars and park there anymore. And you know, which will add to seating space that we can add to it. And you know, one of the big things is what I think would be great for the area, and it's going to be expensive, but, you know, we already know that the city has set aside a budget for us. We just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But an archway over Main Street with the words, you know, it's with the words Hope Alley in English, as well as several indigenous languages, which is really important. And just to see that particular phrase when you're driving down Main Street, and for people while walking down Main Street, they can see Hope Alley right there, right? And so that word is going to be prominent. And and so, you know, it's going to be really expensive, or relatively cheap, but expensive in our kind of dollars.
Yeah.
But we received a positive response from the city, so let's hope that they're going to follow it with you know, some money, right? And they can talk, but let's do something, right?
Well, all my fingers are crossed. But like I always say, until I actually see something,
and
I'm not mean to sound rude.
No,
it does a lot, but until. until we actually see this transform into reality
entirely.
Mouth service
entirely. Entirely, but we do have a budget already. We just don't know what it is. And but then again, we had Winnipeg Foundation there, and they are because they have plans for the area, and they have money for the area. And
yes,
my good friend Jen from Winnipeg Foundation, who's the project manager for the area, I invite her to be there. And they are really, really keen on topping us up, you know, if and when we need it. And so I think that, you know, things will happen. We may not get everything we want. But within Winnipeg Foundation, we even had United Way there. We had the chair of the board from United Way at the event. And you know, with several other funders plus the city, we might get something decent done there, right? It's just you have to reach out, but you know some. But we did have some people there who I don't think got it, and that was really you know kind of put a damper on the day for it. But we're having another meeting, I don't know, in 2 weeks' time. And but you know, we need people who really understand. And this is what we have to teach the city, though, too, because, you know, but we do, our mayor's got a heart for it. He's just doesn't quite, you know some things yet, but it's our job to teach him, right?
Yeah.
But
patiently teach.
Patiently, yes. And I know we are going to get something for it. And, you know, hope is transformational, right? I think you just said that, but it is transformational. And as long as people have that word, you know, in their psyche, it can never hurt. It can never hurt. It can only help.
Yeah.
And but, you know, as you know, once I lost my hope, I jumped off a bridge to take my life, right? I know you know about losing hope as well and how devastating that is to a person's life.
Yeah.
But I think that we are going to, you know, be okay down there. It's just, let's hope that they're their budget will include some, you know, big ticket items as well. So,
well, here's the thing, Al, is that, and I've said this, Winnipeg is my home, I love it, but we're 10 to 15 years behind the rest of North America when it comes to homelessness, addiction, and mental health.
Yes.
So right
and harm
now,
and harm reduction.
And harm reduction, oh yes. But right now we're in a phase where we're playing catch up
yes.
so quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing a lot of good stuff coming from all different sectors.
Mm-hmm.
And we're catching up, and we're catching up quickly. So there's just going to be good things to come. I'm really hopeful to mm-hmm. say the word. I just want to see it all done. Yeah,
we do have a premier whose heart is in the right place on this stuff too.
Oh yeah.
And as you told me one time, he used to come down to Main Street Project quite a bit. To check things out, right? And be a presence. And so if the attitude's right, that's a step in the right direction. You know, it's better than what we had before.
I fully agree. And I can say this with joy that when I worked at Main Street Project, mm-hmm. I would see Wob down there all the mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
And he would just come down with like 20 cases of water
mm-hmm.
and just hang out with us and talk to me and talk to my partner at the time that I was working with
right.
and just have actual conversations mm-hmm. where you could see in his eyes that the wheels mm-hmm. were turning and he was thinking a step ahead of, okay,
right.
when this happens, what can I do to help? And I think it's about time that we get someone who gives a darn about uh-huh. the community in there.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's been a change at City Hall, too, with the new mayor. And I'm not convinced about council. Sure, there's two or three of them there, you know, including my friend Vivian. But I think with our previous mayor, he didn't really have the heart for it. You know, it didn't help matters. And so I think, you know, with both oars and pulling the canoe in the same direction, you know, things can only be better. And, you know, the federal government made a huge announcement the other day, or yesterday, on a new, and I hate using the term affordable because it means nothing, a housing program and low-income housing program. Let's just see how that one rolls out. And because it takes a lot of work and a lot of smarts to get a good housing program rolled out. And the city's done okay with the rapid housing initiative. They've done a good, really good job on that. But, you know, now we're talking about $192 million for our city. And when we were in EPC the other day, Councilor Lutz asked some really good questions to the Construction Association. He says, well, let's say we do agree to take in that money. Do you have the staff to build it? And of course, the guy said, "Well, we'll come get to that bridge when you come to it," which told me they don't have the capacity to build. So, you know, there's going to be all kinds of barriers to jump over or blast through, right? But
there will be.
And the city needs to. They only have one person in their housing division, so they need to really, really up that number too.
They really do, but. Like, what I've always said about Winnipeg is that here in Winnipeg, we like to look at Winnipeg as different than other places around the world, right? Mm. Different places than North America. Mm. But really, we have blueprints printed out that are working in other mm-hmm. cities, other provinces that are 100% feasible here.
Yes.
And in my opinion, and something I've been preaching since I've been doing this here in Winnipeg, is that we need to take these blueprints of success
yes.
from bigger cities that have done this and it's working and implement them here 100%.
Yeah, well, I thought it was really, really strange when the mayor and his advisor went down to Houston to figure out what they were doing when we had that same blueprint here. And it was at home, say, what, 15 years ago. And it worked really, really, really well. It saved people's lives. It got people in housing. It gave them responsibility. It was called Housing with Supports. And we did that here. And we started the whole thing 15 years ago. And we had a really, really excellent program and blueprint here. And I think we need to, and the federal government took that money away, unfortunately, after about 5 years. But people are still using that program. And the city could easily just have gone and asked people here about it. And we're not dumb people here in Winnipeg.
No, we're not. And it's just, we know what to do.
Yes.
Let's get off the pot, shall we say, and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
As my mom always used to say, like, it's here. We know what we need to do.
Yep.
Let's do it. And no offense to people who ride bikes, but making bike lanes instead of houses in the same age
yes.
is we as a city for the next 10 years need to shift priority and look at social housing, a million different. We need to look at building housing for the community, for everyone, affordable housing for everybody.
We do, and you know the problem with the federal government has these plans, but what they do is they build middle-income housing and expect. And again, Christy Freeland was talking about this week is again, you build middle-income housing and you expect a trickle-down effect to the those living in poverty and the low-income home, but it never works that way. It just simply
never
works that way. So it really needs to change. And as the former CEO of CMHC Canada said, you know, we need to start building from the ground up. Start with the low-income housing. Start with the housing geared to income, and then work our way back up to the middle-class housing, because we will never reduce homelessness by building middle class homes. You know, it just doesn't work.
Especially in this day and age where middle class people are no longer middle class.
No, that's right. So many people are dropping.
No longer afford it.
So many people are dropping from middle class into poverty. And and from poverty into homelessness. And that's where our numbers on the street are getting worse instead of better. And the cost of groceries and the moratorium on housing rents, rent increases have now vanished. People are getting hit with some sizable rent increases, and it was supposed to be only 2 or 3%, but landlords are finding ways to increase that to 15 to 20%.
Let me tell you right now, I'm paying just under $1,000 for a one-bedroom apartment.
Same as me.
In September, it's being bumped up to almost $12,000.
Yeah, there you go. That's insane. And this is exactly what we're talking about. And we need some empathy, which is never going to come from the landlords and from the wealthy building owners.
Oh, Lord, no. It won't.
It's not going to come. My own particular landlord, and I won't mention the name, but is spending millions advertising on Air Canada. When I went to Halifax, I saw their ads every 2 minutes on Air Canada on those little televisions on the seat in front of you. They're spending millions. But then they can go ahead and raise our rents, you know, by 16%, 15.9%, right? And asking for 17.9%. And so there's just a – we need to – we're not going to get it, but there needs to be a shift in thinking at that level. But in the meantime, people are really suffering. And with groceries going up, again, one of my favorite things I like to eat just doubled in price from a year ago. You know, went up 100%.
Yep, I was reading that. It's greed. We can't use, like, during COVID, I completely understand that the price of gas, the price of different things would go up.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just an excuse. They're still, the corporations are still hanging on to that as an excuse. Like, I am a single human that lives a very meager lifestyle. Yep. And last time I went shopping, it was over $200.
Exactly.
That's for me.
And they can't blame it on supply chain, because they're asking you to buy 2, 3, and 4 for the price of one. I mean, to get it for the price it used to be. You know, it's buy 2, buy 3, buy 4 to get it for the price it used to be. And that one single item, if you only buy one, is up 40 to 50%.
I
get nauseous about this kind of stuff. But folks, you're listening to Have No Fixed Address, and we're talking homelessness. And of course, we brought in poverty right now, which is really a pertinent and topical issue, because so many people are suffering from it. And our food banks have doubled in usage in 3 years, which tells you a lot about the state of our economy. But folks, you're listening to CQW 95.9 FM, and we're just going to take a quick music break and stay tuned and come back. And we're going to talk about the Washington, which name down on Maine, right across from Salvation Army, whose name I can't pronounce, but you will give us that name later. And come back, and we'll talk more on the core area with my lived experience brother Jacob Coffin. But stay tuned.
Thank you.
Hey, folks. We're back on Of No Fixed Address with your host, Al, and it's balmy 6 degrees, but there's a breeze out there which makes things uncomfortable. And today we're talking with my lived experience brother, Jacob Kaufman, who is almost like a brother anyway, never mind the lived experience part. And we're talking about the Courier. We were talking about Hope Elliott and the things that we hope will happen there. But there's also something else in the area that's giving dignity to the folks there, which cannot be underestimated on the power and the value of giving people dignity, and that is the washroom. Jacob, could you give me the name of that? And Jacob, by the way, is the manager or lead hand at the washroom. And the city did the folks on the street a favor by expanding hours. Because the city pays the salaries there, expanding hours to what, 16 hours now?
So it's the Amalgamate Public Washroom / Resource Center located on Thunderbird House property.
Right.
And we are open from 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. now.
Awesome. Those are great hours. Like people don't stop going to the washroom at 6 o'clock just because the washroom's closed, right?
No, they do not.
And so, you know, again, it's just a furtherance of giving folks dignity. And you know, talk a little bit about the usage of it. I know you have some enormous numbers of people that use the washroom, and a little bit more about what you do there, and about Mumway, I guess, as well.
What I can talk about, Al, is that we are, like I said, open from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and we provide washroom services for the community, and not just our unsheltered brothers and sisters, but everyone.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
We serve thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
Every month, and it's awesome because until Amalgamig was created, there was no place for people to use. Winnipeg had no public washroom,
right.
So much less a resource center where they could come, and we offer harm reduction supplies. We offer not much, but we do offer some housing options. We offer to hook people up with EIA if they want, hygiene products, just some awesome people to hang out with for when they just need to come by and chat.
Yeah, that's really good. I know you have a pretty good staff there, and that really understand the folks on the street. And you know, I know it's really important to have people with lived experience there, and you are one of those. And I know that you have had people with lived experience working there as well. And just talk to me about the lived experience aspect of things and why that's important.
So, I have lived experience. I was homeless for far too long in my younger years, and so education is great. I went to college. I have a great education, but books can only teach so much about one thing, right?
Yep.
So I'm a firm believer that in order to get better connections with people, with anyone that you work with, you have to have things in common. And it gives you a different understanding. When you've eaten out of a garbage can rotten food or had to do certain unspeakable things for money just to survive, it gives you a better connection with people.
It does. It gives you that really much higher level of understanding and empathy, right?
It really does. Instead of looking at them just as community members or as clients, as some people call them, the horrible name, they're family.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an honor to do what I do where I do it.
Awesome.
To the people that basically saved me and taught me how to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's we still have doubters about lived experience, though, which is really, really sad, or just don't understand, and maybe have not been taught or have talked, we have not talked about enough about it, but there are still a lot of folks that, you know, still look down on us as it's almost time to publish that book, Hey Jacob, second class citizen Kane, right?
It really is. And I think a large part of it is, as a society for the last, 100 years, we've put such an emphasis on education,
yes,
as the only form of intelligence, shall we call it, or knowledge, that we've basically, a lot of people are brainwashed to think that, and they think that people like you and I and thousands of others in North America, Canada especially, don't know what we're talking about. Mm. Sometimes we have different views on things, and we have different ways of thinking, but we have those ways of thinking and those views because of the life that we've had to lead.
Exactly, and this is, you know, this is part of my, when I do my training, part of my training is peer engagement, right? And just bringing that power of lived experience into every conversation on homelessness, and how do we inject lived experience into your organization to make it better?
And
but you know, so many people, I call it academic arrogance from some people with their masters and PhDs who just have that opinion about people with lived experience. But you know, my analogy or metaphor, whatever word you want to choose is, and I'll go with this, and Debbie's heard me say this before, I think, where when you watch any sporting event, there's always the commentator and the color commentator, and the commentator calls the game the way he sees it, or a sporting event exactly the way he sees it. But the color commentator is 100% of the time a player or a coach, and who can add that in-depth of color and experience to the event. And that's what we as people who can articulate, because many people that come out of homelessness cannot articulate like you and I can. And so, you know, you and I have that responsibility to do what we can, because others can, but to bring together the master's degree thinking together with lived experience thinking is the best way, but it's not always practiced. But you know, there are organizations like Mama Way who made you lead in the washroom, which was really, really good and much needed. You know, there are glimpses like that, and I'm grateful to have a relationship with the federal government, because the federal government is looking on lived experience folks a lot more, looking to lived experience folks a lot more, as they've given me the opportunity to stand in front of them for 24 hours so far and train them, right, on homelessness. And they're looking for counsel, you know, from lived experience folks, which is really, really good to see. And, you know, I got to speak to Christia Freeland's office yesterday, not her herself, but her office, and you know, on the homeless issue, and you know, this would never have happened, you know, 5 years ago. Never.
No.
You know, cause we were just not even a blip on the radar, or didn't care for what we had to say. But things are changing at the federal level. And she is actually one of the people that I have asked to look into being a keynote speaker at the symposium on homelessness and poverty, and it was met with a positive response as well. So we'll see. I don't hold my breath on that one, but that would be a good one. Things are changing for us as a lived experience in this sector, and you know, Shalom is bringing in more people with lived experience. But you know, so is Main Street Project. It's just a matter of living together as people with lived experience and others, because that is so difficult. And you know, in some of my training sessions, I've not seen fights break, but I've seen things get really emotional, right?
Yep, and emotional is good, because you can't be in the field without emotion.
No, it's true.
And I love that there's this shift happening over the last 5 years that I've seen with the peer engagement and getting peers involved.
Right.
Because I truly believe that, yes, there's been a lot of good done by different organizations, by the government, but I think they realized about 5 years ago that everything they've done hasn't
panned out,
and they should actually get people that, you know, get someone who used to shove needles of heroin in their arm to talk about drug addiction.
Right.
Wow, that's a novel approach. So it sounds so simple and silly, but when I say it, but it's true. Like, you can't.
But it means, Jacob, it means more than means more when you say it, because you've been down that road.
Exactly.
You know, and some bureaucrat, you know, in the down on Broadway does not necessarily have that experience, or won't talk about it if he or she has.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we're making some tracks. But folks, you're listening to No Fixed Address. Your advocacy radio show right here at the University of Winnipeg at CKUW 95.9 FM. Pardon me, I'm tripping over my tongue today. And it's a balmy minus 6 today, but it's windy and it's not nice for folks that have to stay out there. And thank goodness for places like the washroom where people can actually, go to the washroom in dignity, whereas they couldn't before. And any last words you'd like to say to our audience today on anything, Jacob?
Treat people like people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at people as any different than you would your family.
Mm-hmm.
Just treat people like people. That's all I have to keep saying.
Yeah.
I know it's hard. I honestly struggle with that. I've been struggling lately with certain things, but just stay focused.
Life is a trip, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone is equal, and at some point, you never know that person that you may be berating or looking down upon who's living on the street. 20 years later, they could be on the radio talking together like
you and me, brother.
Yeah, it's so treat people like people. Be kind to yourself.
Exactly. You know, what I always say is when you see that person on Main Street, throw your judgment aside, but superimpose my face over that individual and know that they don't have to stay there, and they can get to where I am today. But everybody's success is a different thing, and it's measured differently. And for some, it might be getting into a home and staying there, right? For some, it might be overcoming some mental health issue. But, you know, people's lives can change if we treat them with respect and treat them like people and give them a chance and give them hope. And that's why that Hope Ellie sign, that blue Hope Ellie sign, is hanging there on Main Street and Hope Ellie, and not Main Street Henry anymore. But thanks for coming on again today, Jacob, and we've got to catch up on that coffee again soon.
Oh, yes. Always a pleasure, Al, and thank you, brother.
You bet. Take care. And hope you're feeling better soon.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Folks, you're listening to CKW again, 95.9 FM and of No Fixed Address. Come back next week. We will be on air again, I promise you. My schedule sometimes takes me out of town and gets me busy. And sometimes that busyness gets me down physically. And so every once in a while I have to kind of back off a bit. But we're somewhat re-energized. I did three really good United Way talks this week. And you know, I've been doing it for 6 years now. Every once in a while I think that, you know, maybe it's time to pack it in. But I keep doing it, and you keep having rewarding situations. I don't do this for rewards, but it's so nice when you actually reach people when you're talking and speaking, and people actually get what you're saying. And you can sit around afterwards. We had one law office that we sat around for 30 minutes afterwards and just compared notes and talked about homelessness. And it's so refreshing when people actually want to talk to you about it, you know, and they're open and they ask questions. And so, you know, I've done this week across 160 talks for United Way, which is quite a lot. You know? But it's I do enjoy it. They keep asking me back, so I guess that's a good thing. But folks, you know, we have to do those things too. But folks, come back next week. I'm not sure who we're going to have on top, but we have had a couple people that we've missed out on having on. I think we're going to try to get Thrift people from Thrive Thrive over in Sargent. They're right now at Knox United Church, and they're a really, really good organization. It does a lot of good work, so we're going to try to get them on. If not, there will be somebody else. And so come back next week, folks, and apologies for the tardiness today, but these things happen. Again, take care and be kind when you're going to Tim's. Buy an extra coffee or tea today. And look after somebody on the street. Thanks. Next week.